Tommy McNeil. Humanitarian concerns continue to grow as Turkey's military incursion into northeastern Syria widens and desperate civilians flee, becoming the region's newest refugees. For VOA, Dale Gavalik reports.
Chaotic scenes are being repeated of frightened Kurdish, Syriac, Christian, and Yazidi civilians escaping on foot, carrying plastic bags with their worldly goods, while others are herded onto trucks or motorcycles enveloped in plumes of dust from the latest Turkish bombardment of their land. Roads are gridlocked, with hundreds of fleeing families saying they don't know where to go for safety. Catholic priest Father Emmanuel Yohana, who runs Christian Aid Program Northern Iraq, told VOA from the Duhok region that he expects a wave of refugees from nearby northeastern Syria to flood into Iraq.
Painfully to say, we are expecting the worst. Definitely, if the borders will be opened from Iraqi side to receive innocent civilians.
Yohana and other humanitarian responders say they are suspicious and critical of Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's call for a so-called safe zone along the Turkish-Syrian border. Dale Gavalik for VOA News, Amman.
And President Erdogan claimed Thursday that 109 terrorists have been killed, referring to the Syrian Kurdish fighters. U.S. President Donald Trump is maintaining his phone call with Ukraine's president that has initiated an impeachment inquiry was innocuous, after President Volodymyr Zelensky earlier in the day stated that there was no blackmail in the July 25th call with Mr. Trump. Mr. Trump told reporters, as he had before, that the two men had a perfect conversation, as confirmed by Zelensky. And he said that it should be case over. The phone call between the two men is now at the center of an impeachment inquiry by the Democratic-led House of Representatives. During the call, the U.S. president asked Zelensky to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden and son Hunter, who had business dealings in Ukraine. This is VOA News. Journalist organizations are increasingly concerned that reporters covering the violent demonstrations in Hong Kong are being targeted by police action and sometimes protesters. Voice of America, Mandarin reporter Yue Li, has been among the thousands of journalists in Hong Kong that have found themselves in dangerous situations as clashes erupted between masked protesters and police.
I do feel the unfriendly feeling from the police when we are covering the protests on a really front line. Maybe they feel we are blocking their way, or maybe they're feeling that we are not really neutral.
Hong Kong journalist organizations have accused police of targeting reporters covering the ongoing pro-democracy demonstrations. Eric Wishart is with the Hong Kong Foreign Correspondents Club.
They just don't want journalists sticking their noses in when they're arresting people. The way they arrest people can be pretty brutal, and they don't want cameras poked in.
Hong Kong police denied that they are targeting journalists, but said that there is room for improvement in the coordination between police and the media. A Brexit deal could be clinched by the end of October to allow the United Kingdom to leave the European Union in an orderly fashion. Irish Prime Minister made the comment after what he called a very positive meeting with his UK counterpart Boris Johnson. Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda.
A meeting between the prime ministers of Ireland and the UK aimed at securing a last-ditch Brexit deal is said to have been, quote, constructive, and that both leaders agree a pathway to a deal is still possible. But the joint statement by Boris Johnson and Leo Varadkar gave no other details. The two men were meeting in England with just 3 weeks to go before the day that Britain is scheduled to leave the EU. It's still unclear what terms it will leave on, or indeed whether it will leave at all. The question of how to handle the Irish border remains key to the discussions.
And that is Reuters' Matthew LaRotunda reporting. The number of vaping-related illnesses in the country continues to rise, AP correspondent Shelley Adler.
The CDC says there are now about 1,300 cases and at least 26 deaths, and it's widespread, with Alaska being the only state that hasn't reported any illnesses due to vaping. 219 cases were reported in the past week. That's some good news, since the count had risen by 275 each of the previous 2 weeks. Until the cause is known, the CDC is advising Americans to refrain from using any vaping products. Shelley Adler, Washington.
Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, October 11th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudan appoints its first woman chief justice.
Sudan's Sovereign Council has officially confirmed the pick of Nimar Abdullah as chief justice of the country's judiciary, a first in Sudan and the entire Arab world.
The second group of African refugees and asylum seekers from Libya arrived in Rwanda last night. A new report details the role of an advisor to the President of the Republic of Congo in allocating oil licenses. African governments are urged to make cancer awareness a health priority. And Liberian authorities on Thursday raided and shut down a local radio station, Roots FM.
I have been operating legally. They gave me my papers and they shut me down because they figured that we're too critical and they can no longer condone our criticism of the administration.
Henry Costa is the owner of Roots FM in Liberia. The Liberian government says the shutdown was within the ambit of the law. And a young Somali is shortlisted for this year's Nobel Peace Prize. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudan's ruling Sovereign Council has appointed the country's first woman chief justice. The appointment is seen as another step forward for female representation in the new transitional government. Naba Muhyiddin has more from Khartoum.
Sudan's Sovereign Council has officially confirmed the pick of Nimar Abdullah as chief justice of the country's judiciary, a first in Sudan and the entire Arab world. Many in Sudan see the appointment as a major step forward for Sudanese women. Researcher Nahid Jabrallah is the founder of SEMA Center for Children. She says the appointment of Judge Nimar Abdullah is a victory for Sudanese women and very symbolic of Sudanese women's participation in the 30-year fight against Bashir. It also shows a commitment to women and women's issues. Abdullah was initially appointed Chief Justice soon after military leaders and opposition signed a power-sharing agreement in August. She was quickly replaced, only to be reappointed after huge street protests. The demonstrators demanded an unbiased judiciary, which they think Abdullah can provide based on her background. She has been a judge in the High Court for years and has never been a part of a political party. Unlike most judges at her level, the majority of whom were loyalists to ousted President Omar al-Bashir. At the recent UN General Assembly, Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok praised women's role in the protests that toppled Bashir and ensured there would be civilian representation in the transitional government. Four women have been appointed to cabinet positions in the new government, including the country's first female Minister of Foreign Affairs, Asma Muhammad Abdullah. Former President Bashir is now on trial for money corruption charges, but many Sudanese believe there will be no real punishment for him or his allies unless Sudan's judiciary is completely respected. Naba Muhyiddin for VUA News, Khartoum.
The second group of African refugees and asylum seekers from Libya arrived in Rwanda last night. Rwanda agreed last month to take in 500 of the thousands of migrants who were trapped in Libya after their efforts to reach Europe failed. The first group of 66 migrants arrived in Rwanda last month. Yuji Uwimana has details from Kigali.
The plane carrying this second group of migrants from Libya landed at Kigali International Airport close to midnight Kigali time. Many of the 123 migrants are very young. They seemed to be relieved as they were being transported by from Gashora Transit Center in eastern Rwanda. Rwandan President Paul Kagame said Rwanda is rich at heart as he explained what motivated Rwanda to accept the refugees.
It's not a secret. Rwanda, we are not a very wealthy country. We are not in material terms. But I think we are wealthy in and healthy in many ways, other ways. We are healthy and wealthy at heart.
Ahmed Bafour, Rwanda Country Director for the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says all stakeholders will look for ways to ensure that the refugees will never again be detained in Libya.
And we'll be working closely with the government of Rwanda and the EU to find durable solutions that could include resettlement to a third country, that could include also repatriation to their country of origin, or local integration in this country.
According to the UNHCR, Rwanda is the second African country after Niger that has agreed to host the Libyan migrants. Rwanda agreed last month to take in 500 African migrants who had been stranded in Libya after their journey to Europe failed. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
Liberian authorities on Thursday raided and shut down a local radio station, Roots FM. The Liberian Telecommunication Authority said in a letter to Justice Minister Frank Musa Dean that Roots FM had been operating illegally without a valid license. But Henry Costa, owner of Roots FM, who also hosts a popular talk show on Roots FM, says the government shut down his station because it has been critical of President George Weah's government.
During our broadcast of our flagship program, The Costa Show, I was suddenly alerted by my co-host, Mr. Fidel Sadie, who was in the Monrovia studio, that a court officer or somebody purporting to be from the court, accompanied by armed police officers, were banging on our gate, and they had come to shut us down. Not only to shut us down, but to take all of our equipment away. Broadcast equipment as well as non-broadcast equipment, including computers, just everything they could lay their hands on. This was all happening on the air while everyone was listening. So I announced it to the public that we were under attack. They had two pickup loads of police officers armed with tear gas and riot police. And they finally broke in 40 or so minutes later and they cut the cables. They loaded all of our equipment without doing any inventory whatsoever.
The release here from the Liberia Telecommunication Commission suggests that you have been operating the radio station illegally.
That is incorrect, sir. The previous government shut that same frequency down, formerly called Voice FM. When this president came to power in January of 2018, and I decided to support his administration, his agenda, at least I believe it was a good one, in exchange for my support, they decided to reopen my radio station, reissue my license. That is how I came back on the radio, and I changed the name over the same frequency to Roots FM. So for 19 months since the government has been in power, my radio has been on the air. They give me all of my documents that I needed. I pay my bills. I pay my taxes. So how is it that for 18 to 19 months I've been operating illegally and the government didn't think about that, didn't realize that, as if I was operating under the cave or something, or in a cave? So it is not true, sir. I have been operating legally. They give me my papers and they shut me down because they figured that we're too critical and they can no longer condone our criticism of the administration.
You said they ransacked the radio station. Those who did they have a legal paper?
No, sir. They did not present any document, any court warrant or writ for such a seizure, nothing of the sort. It was only later on during this press conference hosted by the Solicitor General, the government's chief prosecutor, claiming that they had a writ from the court, a writ which was never presented to us.
That was Liberian political commentator Henry Costa, owner of Roots FM. He spoke with us from the U.S. state of Delaware. Liberian Information Minister Eugene Nambwe says the government of President George Weah will continue to encourage free speech and freedom of the press, but will not condone the use of the public space to encourage violence. Mr. Nambwe was defending the government's shutdown Thursday of a local radio station, Roots FM. He says the station, owned and operated by political commentator Henry Costa, had been operating without a license, while at the same time spewing out hate messages and inciting people to violence.
In keeping with the Liberia Telecommunications Act, all broadcasters, radio stations, and all other broadcasters must obtain a license for utilization of frequency and for broadcasting in the public space. Roots FM has been in violation of that requirement. Therefore, the government sought a court order, which we acquired, a writ was issued, and the court officers, assisted by police who protected them, issued a writ in Roots FM and searched the area and seized equipment. So the government acted well within the ambit of the law.
I spoke with Mr. Henry Costa, who broadcasts on Roots FM, and he said that the government said that his station is a threat to national security, inciting violence, and also operating without a valid license. What exactly is the charge?
We outline all of the charges very clearly in our petition to the court. which included the fact that he is operating illegally without our license. And then in addition to that, he has been utilizing this illegal platform to spew out hate messages, to incite people to violence, to incite people to violate the law. So we compiled all of our issues in a petition that we submitted to the court. The issue is that the court in Liberia granted the writ, and therefore the writ was served on Ruth Stephen by officers of the court.
Minister, Mr. Costa said that your government permitted him to broadcast when you felt that he was supporting the government. Is this true? Why now?
The government of Liberia has presented evidence. We presented a series of accusations against Mr. Costa in the courts of Liberia. If Mr. Costa has a counter argument, he can go and present his case to the court of Liberia. This is how a democracy works. We are a government of law, and we continue to utilize the legal process. So we did not go arbitrarily to shut down any citizen in spite of the gross illegality of Mr. Costa.
Eugene Nambo is Liberia's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital of Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington. Today is Friday, October 11th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. October is known as Breast Cancer Awareness Month around the world. In Ghana, a leader in the fight against the disease is calling on African governments to make cancer awareness a health priority. The World Health Organization says breast cancer is the most frequent cancer among women, with 2.1 million new cases each year, and causes the greatest number of cancer-related deaths among women. Mavis Ocheri in Washington has more.
An estimated 227,000 women died of breast cancer worldwide last year. The Global Cancer Observatory estimates that 16,600 cases of cancer occur annually in Africa. Breast cancer is a leading malignancy in Ghana, and 70% of women diagnosed with breast cancer are already in the advanced stages of the disease. Dr. Beatrice Riafi is a breast surgeon and founder of Breast Care International, which works with breast cancer patients and survivors in Ghana. She says although communities in Africa are beginning to address non-communicable diseases, governments need to allocate more resources to create awareness about the fight against cancers, especially breast cancer. She says breast cancer is a development issue, as many women diagnosed with it spend their life savings to seek health care, which leaves them unable to provide for their families.
In Ghana, we don't have any support system. I mean, a national support program for a woman who has been diagnosed with breast cancer. Our national health insurance does not cater for screening. It doesn't cater for the diagnosis. So if we need to do a core biopsy for a woman, it has to cater for herself. And a lot of women are not able to afford that. And so we need to continue creating awareness and also work on policy makers so that we change the narrative surrounding breast cancer. Because a lot of our women are prematurely.
She noted that in Ghana, the youngest known breast cancer patient was 18. Riafi says donation from companies such as Delta Airlines and other charity group Health Breast Care International educate people in rural areas about the need for breast examination and early detection of the disease. One problem, she says, is that most Ghanaians only seek health care when they have pain, but in the early stages, breast cancer does not cause pain. And because breast cancer runs in families, some traditional communities think it cannot be helped. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Washington.
A Global Witness report this week reveals the role an advisor to the president has played in allocating licenses to Italian oil giant Eni in the Republic of Congo. The report from Global Witness journalist Natasha White says there is reason to believe the advisor still plays a large role in the local company. White tells Ricky Stryak why this, what she calls a stark conflict of interest.
We don't have concrete evidence that he is still the owner of AOGC. He formally divested his shares in 2005, and the company apparently provided written evidence to any of this. But we also know that his cousin does or did hold shares until very recently in the company, and similarly was on its board of directors until very recently. The company is also owned and run by two other public officials, senior public officials. And we have reason to believe that he is still behind the company ultimately. It's known as Congo's worst kept secret. And this information any would have had access to.
When the licenses are given in this manner, it means that, tell me if I'm wrong, that the benefits of these resources being sold to an international company, the public, the Congolese public, will not reap the benefits they should.
Yeah, so the theory behind the allocation to local Congolese companies, such as the one we're talking about here, is known as local content. The idea being that you involve local companies in the economy more, and over time that will the revenue will trickle down and not necessarily disappear offshore or overseas like it has done for many decades. The problem is that when corruption's involved, as we've seen over and over again relating to Republic of Congo and the oil sector across Africa and any, that revenue doesn't necessarily trickle down to the economy like it's supposed to under this principle of local content. Congo is sub-Saharan Africa's third largest oil producer, but it's also one of the most unequal societies in the world, the IMF, which is a fairly conservative institution, recently announced. So the point being that its resource revenues aren't getting back to the people, and it's because of these kinds of deals that this isn't happening.
That was Natasha White, a journalist at Global Witness. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from London. This year's Nobel Peace Prize winner will be announced today, Friday, October 11th. Among those shortlisted are Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and Somalia's human rights and peace advocate Elwad Elma. Elma runs the Elma Peace and Human Rights Center, a Mogadishu-based non-governmental organization which helps young youth affected by war, as well as young girls and victims of gender-based violence. Elma spoke to viewers Haroon Maruf about her work in Somalia and what the Nobel Peace Prize would mean to her.
Overwhelmed, ecstatic, honored. It was just a myriad of feelings I was flushed with at that moment, and still feeling that actually right now. The outpour of messages and congratulations and support and solidarity have been coming from everywhere around the world, and it's just been a truly honor.
Obviously, you do a lot of work in Somalia. Tell us a little bit about what you do in Somalia.
So at the core of it, I run the Elman Peace and Human Rights Center with my mother, Fortuna Aden, and we are a human rights organization. So we work on every kind of violation and abuse, but primarily we work in peace and security. We work with young people to help rehabilitate and reintegrate them back into the community, to drop their weapons in exchange for an alternative livelihood and a chance at peace. We co-founded the First Wave Crisis Center in Somalia, so we work very strongly on women's rights and girls' rights, and not only just responding to them, but also providing opportunities for preventing these kind of violence happening against women and girls, challenging social norms and traditional harmful behaviors to make sure that women and girls are free. And we also focus on education, job creation. So our work is cross-cutting, but at the core of it all is building peace, because we know without peace, nothing else can actually sustain.
The work you do in Somalia was inspired by your father, Elman Ali Ahmed. Tell us a little bit about him and what kind of man he was.
Absolutely. The work is 100% inspired by him. The recipe that he created more than two decades ago on exchanging weapons for an alternative, dignified livelihood for foot soldiers, not the commander level, but the average young person that's joining an armed group, a clan militia, a terrorist organization because of sustenance and survival, we still believe that recipe is fitting. We can create peace by negotiating it from the front lines, by giving them an alternative, and that's what we've been doing.
Ilwa Elma is a Somali human rights and peace advocate who is one of those shortlisted for this year's Nobel Peace Prize, which will be announced today, Friday. She spoke with reporter Haroon Maruf of VOA Somali Service. Now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very, very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Lagos, Nigeria, where world defending champion Brazil, five-time African champion Senegal, host Nigeria and England have all confirmed their participation at the 2019 Copa Lagos Beach Soccer Tournament. Organizers of the Copa Lagos Beach Soccer Tournament, Shola Ayipeku and Shei Akiumi, both agreed that the beach soccer tournament will serve as preparations for the World Championships scheduled for November 21st to December the 1st, 2019.
Nigeria needs to be able to pair up with these teams to get ready for the World Cup. You and I know what's going on with regarding preparations, but this for us is also part of a national service that, look, let's give the Nigerian Sand Eagles an opportunity to be competitively prepared.
Where we are today is very far from where we're coming from.
In athletics news, Kenya's world record holder Eliud Kipchoge has compared running a sub-2-hour marathon to going to the moon before his unofficial attempt in Vienna on Saturday to become the first athlete to break the barrier. The 34-year-old Olympic champion set the world record at 2 hours 1 minute 31 seconds at the Berlin Marathon last September, but said Saturday's race is a completely different challenge to show that no human is limited.
That's why I always say you create the limits. None creates limits, but we are creating our own limits in our minds. Limits always are not peaceful. They are mathematics actually calculated in the mind. Those are limits.
And now to cricket news. Marizani Karp's half century was not just enough to rally the South African national female national cricket team, the Proteas women, after a poor start as they fell to an 8-wicket loss to India in game one of their 3-match one-day international series in Vandudora. Suni Lewis is South Africa cricket women captain.
I think it's just a mindset, first of all, and then having a plan to where you want to score against what bowler. That really worked for me today.
And finally, Liberia on Wednesday defeated Chad 1-0 in Monrovia in the first leg of the 2021 African Cup of Nations qualifiers preliminaries. Malaysian-based forward Kipar Sherman scored the only goal of the match in the 43rd minute. The second leg is expected to be played on Sunday in the Chadian capital in N'Djamena. Prior to Wednesday's encounter, Liberian President George Weah took up time to train with his country team. After the training, Moses Gazau asked the Liberian president how exciting it was to train with his national team.
I came here today to train. I love to train. And I think it's a perfect occasion to train with the national team since they'll be playing on Wednesday. Let's just give my own advice to let them know that we believe in them. What they do, they should take it serious because they never know what it leads to.
And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Sudan's ruling sovereign council has appointed the country's first woman chief justice. The appointment is seen as another step forward for female representation in the new transitional government. This year's Nobel Peace Prize winner will be announced today, Friday, October 11th. Among those shortlisted are Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and Somalia's human rights and peace advocate Ilwa Elma. Elma runs the Elma Peace and Human Rights Center, a Mogadishu-based non-governmental organization which helps young affected by war as well as young girls and victims of gender-based violence. The second group of African refugees and asylum seekers from Libya arrived in Rwanda last night. Rwanda agreed last month to take in 500 of the thousands of migrants who were trapped in Libya after their efforts to reach Europe failed. The first group of 66 migrants arrived in Rwanda last month. The Liberian authorities on Thursday raided and shut down a local radio station, Roots FM. The Liberian Telecommunication Authority said in a letter to Justice Minister Frank Musa Dean that Roots FM had been operating illegally without a valid license. That is it for this Friday, October 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell.
I've got a wonderful Pan-African playlist of exciting music from 13 different countries. Song of the Week is Ungoni Bwelezera by Lulu from Malawi. I met Gaida from Diamond FM 93.7 in Tamale, Ghana. He brings us an interview with reggae man Black Rasta.
Black Rasta is a conscious Pan-Africanist, a lecturer, and at the same time a radio presenter.
And my vintage feature is Nyanja xylophone music from 1957. Wow! Listen while you work, while you drive, or while you do nothing at all but listen. Tune in with me on Music Time in Africa this Saturday and Sunday at 15:05 and 20:05 Universal Time.